Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Busy Tuesday morning, Adam White. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. I'm really looking forward to catching up with Tim Coyle because there was something that resonated with me yesterday, just reading the sort of aftermath to the first test around Tim Payne and not over-celebrating the draw. And there was a fist pump, and there's a sort of a resolute fist pump. But as the players started to celebrate robustly up in the change rooms...
All robust.
Ooh. He said, no.
Not here, boys.
Don't go too far because we've been outplayed for most of the test match and we've got to put things into perspective. Great effort to draw. We didn't win. Let's just have a bit of perspective. And I just really liked those comments.
Winston Churchill-style situation.
Correct.
Bit of that activity.
Dunkirk type activity.
Yes, right. More on that through the morning as a part of the show. Jimmy Bartel's back, triple premiership player, Norm Smith medalist, Brownlow medalist, father to be very shortly again. But what's going on, Jim? Good morning.
Morning.
What's Nards doing?
You're at 16-1, maybe 20s to be here for both Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, due date's tomorrow. She's being pretty selfish, really. Not great teamwork from Nadia. It's poor. Holding on to the baby, selfish.
We must admit.
Keeping it to herself.
We're pretty happy about it, to be honest with you, Jim. We get you for the Tuesday. We thought it might have been under the pump.
Oh, shucks.
No, Jim, on Tuesday. We know Tuesday's breakfast day as well.
Yes.
With you.
Porridge day, yes.
So we get you for that, which is great. So Nards is doing the right thing by us.
Yeah, look, if you want to put it that way. I want to just meet the little guy. I already know what we're having, another little boy. So come on, Nards.
Are you comfortable with the name?
Good question. A late change
as you're sort of getting close to the time that, maybe...
I love my wife to bits, but when it comes that last second to the crunch, she did this with our, little man, Aston. Yeah, love the name. Day before, I don't think I like the name. I said, you like the name. You're just talking yourself out of it. We've got this scenario going on again. And I said... I'm a solutions-based man. And I said, Nadia, that's okay. What's the solution? I don't know. I go, I can't name the new one. I don't know. Until you come up with a solution, we have a name.
So who came up with the second name?
She did. Now I'm getting the blame for that. Okay, it was your choice. I allowed you to choose the name. We agreed to choose the name. You actually suggested it. I go, that's a pretty good name. Let's go with that.
Righto.
Now you're backing out of that name. All right, what's the solution? And then she... did come up with an option and goes, no chance in hell, boys. I said, ba-bow.
Oh, no. She's panicked.
Yes.
Sometimes you don't know until you see the baby.
That's rubbish. You know.
That's rubbish.
That's rubbish.
Just don't know.
That's one of the greatest misnomers.
It could look like a Terry.
The amount of it.
I think the little Terry Bartels are good. Yeah. Is a good name.
No.
Brian Bartel.
Yeah, the Gav.
Bruce Bartel.
The Bruce could be right. But,
Daryl.
Aston's already named him. He's called him Rocky because it's his favourite character in Paw Patrol. But it's funny. We've taken a bit of a sweepstakes in our family that when the baby will arrive and wait sort of thing. And so I've been like jumping out of, around corners going to Nadia trying to scare her. Go, ha! Like expecting it. So much so that Aston's now starting to do it. The little 2.5-year-old keeps going up to his mum going, ha!
Which I'm sure mum's not appreciative of.
Yeah, not very happy.
Because I reckon he'll do it a few more times than you will.
Yeah, exactly.
Not overly helpful.
No, he's persistent. I'll give him that.
Not overly helpful from Aston. Well, we hope it goes well for you, Jim, and whatever that is. Hopefully it's about 9 o'clock today and not anywhere before. That would be nice if Nards could just hold on for a little while.
Yeah.
Just for a little while. Hey, yesterday I'm sure you two were glued to the television because after how many weeks in the NFL, we've only got one undefeated team now, Jim. Mm. Your boys, the LA Rams, who you tipped at the start of the season to be the Super Bowl champions, are undefeated at the moment. But yesterday, the story that I was following was the Patriots' performance. And now Tom Brady, after yesterday's victory, last gasp victory for the Patriots, is, as the US say, the most winningest player in the history of the NFL.
They love that statistic. Everything's about wins and losses for them, which is great. It's easy to measure, and they obviously measure their seasons in whether you go above or below 500.
Yes.
Which is a great way to put it. Just We don't care how it gets done as long as you win. Yep. Tom Brady had his 200th win, which is pretty incredible because they, until recent times, they only had 16-game seasons. So yes, that gives that a little bit of perspective how successful he has been. But he has been, and I don't mean to discount it, Whitey. I know you get around with your Tom Brady T-shirt on every second day. They've been in the worst division in history for the last 10 years. Now, they've been excellent because they've won 5 Super Bowls, but
yes,
they get a couple of free hits there. But we were talking about this, weren't we, Whitey?
I agree with that, by the way.
Thank you. We were talking about this yesterday, that Tom Brady is the perfect example of not only talent, but actually understanding the rules of the game that you work in. So the rules have changed a lot in NFL, especially protecting the quarterback.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, holding, you know, penalties and things like that, and also knowing your own capabilities. Now, Tom Brady's over 40 years of age. He's not going to be able to sling it down the field 50 yards. But the amount of times he throws it down the field, only 5-6 yards, and he makes the most of... The defense can't stop wide receivers, hold them at the line. So he just goes, well, if I've got the quickest guys off the line, he just throws little 4-yard passes, 5-yard passes, and just keeps picking off field territory, and at worst, they get a field goal.
Yep. So, always in scoring position.
So a lot can be said for actually players understanding the rules that they...
And themselves.
Yeah, and themselves, and play with them within those parameters. And it's the whole probability game. That's all he plays, time and time again.
Mm.
I'll do something that's 70 to 80% all the time.
So yesterday they won 43-40.
Which is a high-scoring affair.
Yes. It was. And they scored the winning field goal as time elapsed. So it's the 41st time that he's had a game-winning drive to win a game. It was because it was 40-all before they got the game-winning field goal. And I want to ask Jimmy a question first. But first, just 41 years of age and doing what he's doing, is there anybody in the world at that age that is still at the absolute top of their game?
I can't answer that off the top of my head.
Because I genuinely don't think there would be.
A physical sport?
Yeah, but there's elements of that. You look at an NFL quarterback's physical requirements, and he's a big dude.
He's huge. He's 6'6".
Yeah, he's a big dude and a big strong dude. But he's not. You wouldn't call him a great athlete. He's a terrific sportsman.
He's what Jimmy said. His understanding of the game. A bit like Cameron Smith, the way he plays NRL. He just knows the game. Knows to manipulate the game to serve his purpose.
So I think if you're a smart player in that role in American football, you can survive for a fair while because the physical requirements really aren't that extreme. If you've got a craft and you're awesome at it like he is, then you can survive a bit longer than most other sports, I would say.
Well, his position is the ultimate skill-based position.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I agree with that. But I think the thing that amazes me most about him is that he continually does it despite the expectation on him. So he's seen as the greatest of all time and all these sorts of things, and you know the results suggest he probably is. But time and time again, under pressure, he's the one that delivers, and he doesn't get tired of doing that. Whereas a lot of the athletes, once they get into their sort of mid to late 30s maximum, it's like, oh, I just can't be bothered doing this anymore. Whereas he just, you know, and Jimmy, the game yesterday against the quarterback from the opposition, it was almost like he wanted to make a bit of a point.
Yep.
So you know it a lot more than I. Explain who it was and how it all unfolded.
So he was playing against a young superstar, Pat Mahomes, his name is. So statistically, through the first 6 rounds in history, no one's thrown more touchdowns in the first 6 games. So this young kid is a rocket. So like, if you want to use full forward terms,
yep,
it's like he's averaging 7 goals a game the way he's been going.
Right.
So he's through his first 6 starting games. Now he did a start last year, but this is his first real chance at the wheel. It'd be like sitting at round 6 and he's sitting on 40 goals for the year.
Right.
So, Adrian McAdam style.
Yeah. Adrian McAdam style.
Yeah, Adrian McAdam style. We'll make it a bit more glamorous key position, but Adrian McAdam style. And Tom Brady.
Oh, Djokovic.
Going against Tom Brady, who has won the last 4 Coleman, 5 Coleman medals.
Yep.
Just going, right, I want to prove a point here.
Yep.
I'm still the big dog in town. You know, like the Warwick Kappa, this is my dance floor. You're just dancing on it up at the SCG sort of stuff. And he took that challenge. He takes those challenges absolutely personally.
Mm.
And just further, I know we're the love fest for Tom Brady, but the thing I do love about him as an athlete and where I rate champions is Can you make your teammates better around you as well?
Yep.
Now, we've seen individuals put on brilliant seasons, and I look at that even in AFL terms as well, as absolute superstars, but they make some players around them better and take them with them. So we've got some superstars across all sports who go, geez, they're absolutely brilliant. And then you look at the team success and the players around them. Well, have they brought along a young player and as well with them and made them a better player?
Mm.
And Tom Brady, he's starting sort of what they call those skill position players. So your running backs, your wide receivers, your tight ends. Round one, he's six skill players that he gets to work with, you know, try and score touchdowns and march the ball down the field. Apart from one player, they're all completely different already in round six.
Right.
Now, this is a game that relies on, you know, connection and continuity and, you know, all that cohesion, all those words, because everyone has to be on time, in position.
Yep.
So already 5 weeks, he's got almost a new forward line.
Well, we've tacked on the Niall O'Brien story a little bit late in our life for our liking, but he is a superstar in Irish cricket and last week announced his retirement from the game. We thought we'd track him down and find out what the hell has gone on. Niall, good morning.
Good morning. Good evening here. Good morning to yourselves in Melbourne. Hope you're very well.
We are very well, and we're very pleased to talk to you, although I must admit I thought there might have been a few more years left in the old dog. What's happened?
Listen, all good things must come to an end, my friend, and you know, I'm glad to have bowed out at the top. It's one of those things that can't play forever, and I've come to the realization that plenty more in the world for me to do and achieve, and now is the best time to do it. So I'll go out with, as I mentioned in my statement, nothing but smiles and fond memories and lots of laughs and a few good days at the office, as it were.
A couple of ripping days at the office, and none more than that day you made it 72 against Pakistan in the World Cup in 2007. It was the number you identified yourself with in cricket on the back. Is that the moment, when you look back at all the things you've been able to achieve in cricket, that stands out?
It stands out, yeah. I must say that was a fantastic day. It was, you know, it was a long time ago now. I can't remember too much. I remember the game. I don't remember much about the night afterwards because, as I told you many times before, when we win a big game, we celebrate pretty hard. But that was a great night. It was a wonderful day. I was playing terribly leading into that game, so I was delighted to put a match-winning performance in. But we've had so many good days in the Ireland shirt. I think as a team, beating the West Indies in 2015 over in Nelson was one of my fondest memories. Chasing 320, brilliant wicket, chasing down with ease with a couple of overs to spare. Being there at the end, 70-odd not out with my old mate John Mooney, knocking off the winning runs, that was a particular highlight. But as I said, listen, more ups than downs, which I'm sure a lot of sportsmen around the world can't really appreciate, but I'm delighted to have way more ups than downs. And as I said, I love the game, I love cricket, I love watching it, playing it. Whatever the case may be, I want to be involved in cricket. And it was a sad day, but at the same time, a good celebration. And the celebrations will keep rolling in over the next couple of weeks.
Noel, congratulations on a fantastic career. As Daniel said, there's been plenty of highlights. And you mentioned John and part of that amazing group of Irish players who have all been together through this journey. Is it even more special that you've been able to share that with your brother, Kevin?
Very much so, yeah. Myself and Kev, we're very close. We're obviously brothers, but we're very close friends. It's strange, really, when you have a sibling in the team, you hang out a lot together, but at the same time, you can be fairly frank with your siblings, whereas you wouldn't be with, you know, friends, as it were. But we've had great days. We've also annoyed the hell out of each other, and I've run them out a few times in very, very serious matches. So mum and dad haven't spoken to me on a numerous occasion. the darling little angel Ed, but it's brilliant. You know, everywhere myself and Kev have gone, mum and dad have followed, and my brothers and sisters and wife have followed to support us. So it's been great. You know, I've said to you boys many, many times, I've never looked upon cricket as a job. It's always just been an absolute joy and a pleasure to do something I love for a living. And unfortunately, that's finished, but with one door closing, many more doors will open, all being well. So I'm looking forward to the next chapter.
Do you understand the impact you've had on the game in Ireland with your brother and that group we mentioned? Obviously, when you would have started off, would have been, you know, on small suburban grounds, but towards the end, no doubt you probably drive through an Irish summer and see grounds full of kids playing cricket?
Yeah, that's probably the kind of best and the biggest thing, really. Now, when I was growing up, you had to keep cricket a secret. You know, if you tell people in certain neighbourhoods you play cricket, they try and beat you up. And nowadays, everyone in those those same neighbourhoods are playing cricket on the streets and in the parks. So that's, you know, with all the World Cup wins and medals and trophies and et cetera, that's probably the biggest impact we've ever had, bringing cricket to the wider public of Ireland. And the kids love playing. They've got cricketers who are role models, which is never the case before. So, you know, certainly from that point of view, we can all look back and pride. And I'm very proud that myself and all my teammates down the years have effectively put Irish cricket on the map, not just overseas, but more importantly, in our hometowns and countries. So that's great, and hopefully I can be a part of that moving forward with the next generation, whether it be in coaching or, you know, other aspects. I'm looking forward to seeing how the next generation go about the business.
And what we love about Scotty this time of year is he's a dual threat. He's not only footy, he's racing. And, of course, the Drifters article yesterday, Jim, which you loved.
I loved.
Got us thinking that we need to have this man more.
In Zoolander, they call him a slashy.
A slashy?
Yes.
Slashy.
Football slash racing journalist.
Ah, yes. Well, welcome, Slashy.
Thank you, yes. No, I live in the world of slash. You never pigeonhole yourself, James, in one area. You need a slash.
And that was sacked.
That was
correct.
That was apt on
particularly
Saturday.
Particularly in my place. Yes.
Well, you were a drifter because you were with us, and then all of a sudden a message came through that you were in marquee type.
Yeah, that was
I got.
I must admit.
Hoity-toity.
I had many things in play.
What happened?
And I was balancing them. And I thought, I'll go and catch up. And I realised it's the other side of the world at Caulfield. We were in one side.
Yes.
And where I had to go was the other. And then I got there and was a bit puffed. And then I got caught, you know, drinking, talking. And then suddenly it's the last race and I had to make a call. And unfortunately, I gave you the flick. I'd spent 4 hours with you. I'd bonded like no man. I had bonded. Others in the party hadn't done a lot of bonding. Adam Rabanaskis. But anyway, we'll move on from that.
He wasn't doing a lot of bonding.
He was just planting himself in the one spot.
Move all
no, nothing. Fresh air.
Pot plant type situation.
Mm. Oh, arrogance. So, no, it was a very good day. Thank you to the TAB and others.
Yes,
very
absolutely.
Nice area.
Absolutely.
Who
are
the others?
I don't know. There might be other people we had there.
People bringing out the food that Whitey wasn't eating?
Well, there was one good course. We never saw it again. Chicken. Yeah. It only came out once.
It's like a KFC type setup.
To use racing terms, are you better for the run and building into a big spring yourself personally?
Oh, no, I set myself for these time of the year. I'm ready. I don't need fitness. I'm ready to go.
Caulfield Cup this weekend, you're primed and ready to go?
I'm going to the country because I'm a people's man, so I don't necessarily have to corporate every week.
You're the Avoca Cup this week.
Avoca Cup.
You taking the people's horse with you just to feed carrots and give kid rides?
No, I'm currently on a bus trip with gentlemen.
Currently got wheels on the back of the people's horse.
Probably, what is it, 7:09 on Saturday. We might be drinking even by now. It's one of those sort of trips.
Drinking hydration.
It's a betting
important.
Syndicate breakup.
Yeah, Avoca Cup Day is a good day.
Yeah, it's a great day.
Hang on, we discussed the betting syndicate, or the, I guess, the lack of leadership for the Punters Club. Were you a part of this Punters Club yesterday on the weekend?
The Quaddy?
Yes.
Well, I presented some very large odds.
He did. Scotty was almost the hero.
Thank you. You can tell this story.
Vacillator.
100-1. I said, this will beat that superstar. It didn't quite beat the superstar. Ran second at 100s. Yeah, what happened to our winnings?
Wow. That's a topic for another day.
I got a messy message from someone in this area saying, we had it at Morphettville on the last, and that's the last I heard.
Yeah, no, Shut-In sort of was our undoing. Shut-In was our undoing in the end.
$1.75 pop.
Lost.
Better say Zach Burton is banned from our world now.
Oh. Which leads, because you are our racing expert.
That's correct.
Slashy, as we've established. You're actually going to use Punters Club money for something. You don't often get money back from a Punters Club.
No, but the gentleman in my Punters Club, my other one, they've punted really well, so I get the winnings. It's divided. It's a very good thing.
Well, it would be if you make a profit.
No, these gentlemen do, whereas on Saturday we were a tad unlucky.
What about the Bombers? Are they unlucky? Can they get this deal done with Dylan Shield? Seems to have hit a snag, as they say.
That's a shock, Daniel, to everyone in the industry. That Essendon... When did we find out Shield was going there? Last week.
Yep.
And in a shock development, on the day before deadline, they're at a incompasse. Is that what they call it?
Impasse?
That's it. They want GWS, say, 2 first rounds, which, given, I think, is fair enough, given the way these deals have been going. Essendon's got 9 and 34. So, Adam, you're an expert in this field.
They need another pick between 18 and 25 for him.
Thank you. There it is.
But they don't obviously have that at the moment.
Futures. And then swap one back. That's how you get it done.
Yeah, so it becomes
two list managers.
It becomes one and a half.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's what it
does. You give two, get one back.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sort of scenario.
So we're starting to get to the sweaty jockstrap type. You know, it's Tuesday.
Do you believe that? All day. Or is it being held off for you, all of you, media types?
No.
To build the hype. You've got TV shows who are running now.
Oh, well, that's embarrassing.
We don't have the fax machines anymore going at Princess Park.
But the new sheriff in town arrives. See, this is Peter Bell, like ticker tape parade stuff. He arrives at Tullamarine. He holds the key to a lot of things. Lockie Neal to Brisbane, Hogan to Fremantle.
That's the most important one. We've been saying it.
I know. From day dot.
Day dot.
And it seems to have not moved since day dot. Neal has.
So who's holding that up? Is that Freo or is it Brisbane not?
Freo want more.
Freo want more.
What do they want? Which I don't agree with.
Well, Brisbane, as RSN understands, have offered their
club insiders staff say. Sorry, keep going.
Have offered their first pick five,
which is right.
Which he's is worth right. more than that.
Lucky Neil.
Yep. And some pick swapping.
Is he worth more than Dylan Scheel?
He's worth the same.
Same.
But five's better than nine.
It is, but I think Neil's 5 and 20, 5 and 22, something like that.
Yeah, and bring one back, but...
Are the Lions not coming to dance on that scenario?
Well, I think they think that's fair and reasonable.
But this is the problem that we find ourselves in when contracted players nominate clubs to go to. It's all well and good to do that, but the club then thinks, the destination club thinks, well, we've got the whip hand here because they want to come to us. And so for the first week of trade week, they sort of feel like they've got the strong position. But at the end of the day, they're still a contracted player at the other club. Mm. So they then push back, and that's where we have this to-ing and fro-ing.
The one I can't see happening is Beams. Because all the mail is, you know, and the Beams side are saying it'd have to be an amazing deal for Brisbane to do it. I don't see what Collingwood's got that's amazing. Pick 19 or whatever.
Superficially. I think 18. Yeah.
Superficially, they haven't got much.
That's what I mean. So...
Unless they get moving on something in the next little while, which they need to get onto.
And can I just clear something up? Because a lot of people are saying, well, Collingwood don't have much because they need a certain amount of draft picks to have enough points to get their two NGA Academy kids who are going to be high-end. They don't have to have enough points this year, so just explaining a bit of the system. You can go into deficit for next year now, which means, say they go into deficit in points.
Yep.
Next year, your second round pick, say maybe is pick 20, because you don't have enough points, they'll just get shifted back. It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Beams is a really interesting one because he's 29 in February next year, so he's a bit older than, say, Wingard,
Neal
and Scheel, who are also in that sort of 25 range. But he's the best player of those four, I would say. So what's he worth compared to what the others are worth?
Oh, he's worth less.
Because of his age.
Yeah, it's obviously a quality player. We all know that. But he's worth less because of his age. And that's just...
But he's worth more than 19.
Yeah, so he's probably...
Is he?
I think so.
I think he is. He's a player, but his record and resume is terrific, but he's also...
Lucky Weller went for two.
He's also hitting on... No, it was a glitch. Oh, it was
that's an outlier.
That's a glitch. Oh, the Lucky Neal deal is a glitch.
How old was Bryce Gibbs when he went last year?
About the same age, 29-30.
He's as good as players, Bryce Gibbs.
And going to a grand finalist.
So then they ran 10th.
That's a fair point, Scotland. The Bryce Gibbs.
That's what I bring.
Link, well played.
Slashy.
It will be fascinating. Some of the controversy from the Brisbane camp saying that, I'm not going to let him go. He's contracted and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like that from Brisbane. I don't like that from clubs because every club is ripping players out of other clubs' contracted, but when somebody in contract of their club is going elsewhere, they're playing hardball. That doesn't seem to make sense to me, Jim.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but a bit of the angst is coming for the fact that he had a heavily front-ended contract.
Mm. But this is not his problem.
It is a bit of his problem now if he wants to get out of the club, and that's why they're...
There's a club problem.
Yeah, look... As you say,
it's a you problem, not a me problem.
Correct way, and I agree with you, but I'm just explaining why there's a little bit of angst that you're going... Well, you've taken all your money now.
Yeah, and you're on nothing, and now you're leaving.
Yeah, you're trying to go get that money again somewhere else.
No, but, well, yeah. I can understand the tension, but again, this is club management issues as opposed to player
which
problems.
I agree with.
Your point's a good one, because I heard Port Adelaide's Jason Cripps. I went Jamie, I thought that's not his name.
Premiership player.
He's the premiership player from West Coast.
Yeah, correct.
High half forward.
Jason Cripps say in the Chad Wingard thing, it's like, well, we understand it because we've gone and pinched players, so we're not getting up and about that Chad wants out. And we've got Dixon and other people, so we know how it works. But we still haven't heard from Ryan Burton, yay or nay.
Well, he's currently at the tables in Vegas.
Yeah, I know. He's had his fitness medical.
At the tables.
At a day club in Vegas.
I was going to say in the Bellagio day club. Yeah.
On the rooftop bars that we've all seen.
What position is he going to play at Port Adelaide?
Oh, attacking half-back flanker.
No.
Maybe going to the midfield. Nope.
I reckon he's going to play wing, or he's going to play forward.
He's going to play forward.
Forward?
Yeah.
When did he become a forward?
In junior football, that's what he was drafted as.
Yeah, but he's been trained, realigned.
Exactly, and maybe he'll be realigned to what he's actually been trained and drafted for.
Because it is an extraordinary situation that 3 weeks ago, Port Adelaide don't have Ryan Burton on the radar at all. Ryan Burton certainly doesn't have it on the radar playing
Port
Adelaide. So all of a sudden, they've got all these decisions they've got to make because of Chad Wingard choosing Hawthorn as opposed to choosing the Bulldogs.
It was good by Cripper. Who, when it was asked the question, oh, who came up with Ryan Burton? No, not us. Like, just put it way back on Clarke.
I must admit, as a former wearer of the number 5 at Hawthorn, the highly revered number 5, I'm a bit concerned about this trade. He's given the number 5, Ryan.
I think that'll...
What about the Chad?
Recover pretty quickly if the Chad gets in the 5.
The Chad wins the 5. Sure. Will you present the Chad win?
Chad's not getting the 5.
Well, Tom Scully.
You've got to earn the 5.
Tom Scully?
Really?
Can we clear up the Tom Scully situation? Because we sort of talked about it yesterday, is how it is that Hawthorn are potentially getting Scully for a third round pick.
It calls for an AFL investigation.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, who are these people?
Oh, you know who.
Who are your types?
He's one of your types. Shock jocks.
Whom?
Shock jocks. We're not mentioning.
But I think it's worth mentioning that Scully's ankle injury is a very serious problem. And there is still a doubt as to whether he'll ever get back to the footballer he was before the injury. And that's where there is significant risk attached to it, because he's still got 2 years left on a deal at the Giants worth good money. Now, Hawthorn, I understand, is offering 4 years, so they'll absorb that contract plus give him an extra 2. But the risk is Giants are going, well, we've got salary cap issues. This guy might not get on the field next year and we carry that money, or do we actually just cut our losses now and do the deal to make it someone else's problem?
Is he the next Steve Johnson?
Well,
Stephen wasn't supposed to be able to walk.
And he played another 200 games.
Tom, but I think, I don't know whether Tom Scully has a lot of confidence in the Giants medical team based on what has happened with his injury and the recovery.
But, so pick 60 is okay because you sell that the ankle's bad, and then December 1, he's there sprinting laps, winning time trials.
Well, the thing with this is, the interesting part of this is there's no real resistance from the Giants,
it seems,
for this number. So they're seeing this as a fair deal for whatever reason.
As you
articulated.
Salary dumper.
Salary dump and significant injury. Well, 53 is not, but let's just get him out. Let's clear him out. Just get what we can and clear him out and just start again.
So I think Hawthorn understands that they're taking it to buy beware type situation, that they're going to back their medical team in and whatever else, that they'll be able to get him up and going. But I think they're taking a more long-term approach with him, that rather than saying he's going to be brilliant next year. It might happen, I'm not sure.
Which is interesting too, because of course losing Andrew Russell to Carlton of recent weeks, or last week, they haven't got anyone to take over that sort of high-performance strength and conditioning role. And he's been a megastar at that, Andrew Russell, through his 14 years at the club. So to getting a player like Scully into the system without having that head of performance, that's an interesting call,
too. Because, I made the comment last week that it looked to me that Hawthorn, maybe the system had caught up with them because of, that the drafting process and whatever else, because they just couldn't see how they were going to get players in. But if they get Wingard, Scully and Scrimshaw, which is what they're looking at, that's, add O'Meara and Mitchell to that, they're replenishing a different way.
Yeah, but I found that conversation interesting, the fact that, Hawthorn's always trading away the future and all that, but if you go through the guys that they've traded for their first round picks, they've been excellent in doing this. Their track record speaks for itself. Gunston, O'Meara, they even used
Lake.
Brian Harris at the stage. He became Lake. Yeah, even Burgoyne, I think, was tied to some picks. They've been excellent at it. So I guess, you know, to use the thing, I trust their decision-making and process the way they do it. They haven't had really, apart from O'Rourke, which two clubs failed on. Like, two clubs used...
Mitch Thorpe.
No, but that actually proves the point. They've used the draft.
And got it wrong.
Horribly. Bo Dowler.
Oh,
there's no need to go. There's no need to go down this track.
Together, weren't they?
Fine, young gentleman. 21 past 7. Scotty Gallon's with us from the Herald Sun. He's our slasher, and we'll talk some racing with Scotty after the break as well. We'll talk about Sam Lloyd joining the Bulldogs. We're going to chat to Sam Power, by the way, the list manager of the Dogs after 8. But we'll touch on it after this. Of course, we are T-minus 40 or so hours before the end of the AFL trade period. 8:30 tomorrow evening.
There wouldn't be a situation where deals would be delayed just for the prime time factor.
No doubt.
But prime time on what? It's not on TV, is it?
Yeah, it's everywhere.
I've got no idea.
Prime time?
I assume it must be.
The lowdown? Yes.
Unless RSN's going live to it, no one's going to listen.
What about the lowdown?
I want to talk about Tim Payne and the development, the evolution of the young man who is now the captain of the Australian cricket team. So who better to understand him and articulate that than his former coach at Tasmania for 9 years, Tim Coyle, who's currently on location in Papua New Guinea doing some coaching, but he's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, boys.
Just firstly, before we get too deep into the Tim Payne conversation, what's happening in Papua New Guinea?
I actually have some work in the cricket program, so I've been doing a little bit of work with them this year. So the head coach over here is former Queensland bowler Joey Dawes, who I work with the Australian women's team, and I did some work with them, and he's up here doing some work as a head coach, so... He dragged me up here to do a little bit of specialist coaching. It's, really good cricketers up here and a good program.
Fantastic. It's good that we're spreading our wings and helping out the regions in the world of cricket. Can I ask you on Tim Payne, this young man that you've had a heap to do with through your time in cricket in Tassie, who's now the Australian cricket captain. Did you see anything back when you first came across him that this was... something that could happen, not obviously be Australian captain necessarily, but to be a leader like he's become in the world of cricket in Australia?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I suppose I'll go back to when Tim was WC, I reckon, coming through the Tasmanian programs and underage programs, under 17s and 19s. Back then, he was certainly a leader within the program, and was captain. Was very identifiable as a leader, just the way he went around his about his business, even when he was 15 or 16 years of age. So no surprise that he'd worked his way into the senior system in Tasmania that, we always thought that there were leadership capabilities there. Obviously, it had to be mixed with what he was doing as a wicketkeeper and a time-honouring batsman, and then he batted in the middle order. So it was all a bit of a balance, but even when he wasn't captain, he was certainly a significant leader in our program.
Timmy, he must be incredibly resilient character. Of course, he was playing, some Australian cricket, but the hand injury that set him back a long time, he just seems to be incredibly focused and resilient to be able to get back to where he is now.
Yeah, I think resilience is the word that describes him on many fronts. He's had some real disappointments and he's had some real challenges, physically, mentally, and yet he does bounce back very well. But he's a very strong young man and... right from the get-go in Tasmanian cricket, he certainly had the eye on the prize. He wanted to play cricket for Australia. And just the way he prepared, the way he inspired his teammates, he certainly led by example. Fairly tough individual in terms of what he expected of himself and others. So there are a lot of good things about him as a person and a cricketer that led to think that one day, if it ever happened, that he could be Australian captain.
Well, you coached him for so long, and you mentioned, obviously, the batting, the leadership and the glove work. What is the thing that he has probably improved on the most or put the most time into?
Oh, he's worked really hard on his wicket-keeping. And not that he certainly didn't do that because he needed to improve a great deal. He was already very good. His work ethic around his wicket-keeping is as good as anyone I've worked with. Spends hours and hours and hours on it and... to make sure that he's got his game, that part of his game in order, so he doesn't have to worry too much about it. From a batting point of view, he started as an opening bat in Tasmania and scored a double 100 very early in his career and then transitioned out of there to being a wicketkeeper bat to 6 or 7 and played a significant role for us through those years where we were successful, it was very important that we had a Tim Payne batting at, you know, number seven in our order. He played some very, very valuable innings, not dissimilar to the way he played the other night, where he certainly held the, you know, the bottom order together and scored some runs himself. So he's worked consistently on all parts of his game, you know, and he's there's no stone unturned for him to make sure that he gets better every year. Even at, you know, 33 years of age, I reckon he's probably working harder now than ever.
Has it surprised you at how seamlessly he's sort of moved into this role? And we were talking earlier this morning to him about just some of his ideologies that are starting to sort of emerge as a leader, as a captain of the Australian cricket team. It's very impressive.
Yeah, I think really, you know, like all, you know, young players do, if you aspire to be, you know, running out on MCG Grand Final Day or the Boxing Day Test or, you know, playing in front of a massive crowd in the subcontinent for your country. And I really think that Tim's always had that dream. He's always had that in the back of his mind. That's the thing that's driven him. So I'm not really surprised, particularly when, you know, you see what he's invested in the game with all the setback that he's had, you know. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that good things will happen to good people, and he's one of them. And he's just held his belief. I'm sure at times he's felt like it, you know, was over. But I don't think he ever stopped believing, which was really important. And then he's also had some good people in his corner. He's had some really good people around him. Influence of George Bailey in Tasmania with Tim. I think a significant influence in his career has been Ricky Ponting, who he's very close with and would be a mentor for him in this period where he is captain of Australia. So I think, you know, no surprise, and I'm not surprised that he's doing as well as he's doing.
I want to ask you about that time when he almost, not so much gave it away, but when things were getting really difficult, when he couldn't get his finger right. He got that bouncer from Dirk Nattis in the exhibition game. He'd played cricket for Australia already, and he went through a period where he just couldn't get it right. How close was he to giving the game away?
Well, through that period where he had numerous surgeries, there were just a number of reasons behind why it just didn't heal, and he kept trying to come back, and I remember a couple of times where he just broke at training. Again, he'd just walk off and throw his bat down and walk off and said, well, take his bigger kitten gloves off and so it's broken again. And off he'd go. We wouldn't see him for a few months and he'd go and have some more surgery. And it was so frustrating for him. But as I said before, there's one thing about him, that he's resilient, but his belief that, you know, one day he could get this thing right and be back playing was extraordinary. And, you know, no matter how many times he's got a setback, he still came back pretty strong, and he got through that period, and then just the recent period where he wasn't been selected in Tasmania, and very close to leaving Tasmania to go and work in Melbourne. There was a couple of us in his corner then saying, don't turn your back on it yet, there's still more cricket to come. One of those is Adam Griffiths in Tassie. He's a new coach now, and I certainly spoke to Tim quite a bit during that period. I'm sure Ricky would have done, and we're all saying, you know, let's hang in there, something happened, and it did. And now we're seeing, you know, the results of that, which is fantastic.
And that scenario itself is fascinating and basically unbelievable how it's all unfolded since then. As you said, wasn't getting picked for Tasmania, and all of a sudden, next week, he's the captain of Australia with the circumstances obviously beyond his control that no one would have seen coming. To be able to deal with that and then, as Whitey said before, have the mental capacity and strength of character to lead in his own style, let alone feel comfortable on the team, it says a fair bit about his, and you talked about resilience before with Jim, but his ability to cope with different scenarios that's been thrown at him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, there were a few people who did stop believing in Tim Payne. Unfortunately, one of them wasn't him. You know, the Tasmanian people obviously thought they needed to go another way, and that's fine. That's decisions that happen in sport. But, you know, there are other people that still had a great belief in Tim and where his cricket could go. So, you know, we thank God for that, that was still happening. And then, you know, an opportunity arose, you know, with his chance to get back into the team. The wicketkeeper, there's no doubt in my mind that his wicketkeeping is, you know, up there, has been up there with the best in the country for 10 years, you know, despite even when he was injured, you know, he still ranked really highly as a wicketkeeper. And that was a true ranking. So when opportunities arise with the gloves, and they did, he was ready to go. So, and then the captain, it was quite a natural thing. I think most people now have seen what he brings to the table as a leader. He's a very natural leader. He's worked hard at it, and he's got a great belief in his own ability to be a leader, which is also very important.
The Melbourne Marathon Festival is an absolute cracker, and on Sunday, if you haven't done it or been a part of it, find a way to get into it at some stage. You've got the 5K, the 10K, the half marathon, the full marathon. You can find your own way through it. Have a great time there. The weather was beautiful on Sunday, and we saw something very, very special. A race record in the women's marathon was taken out by Sinead Diver. 41-year-old, if you don't mind. I don't think she'd mind me saying that. She joined us on the Breakfast Club to talk about it. Good morning, Sinead.
Morning.
Great to have you on. After that performance, I think I read yesterday or this morning, Sinead, that you were 22 minutes ahead of the second placed female runner. You absolutely smacked them. Were you expecting that level of running?
Training has been going really well for this year, really. So I had a time in mind. If the conditions were good, I was going to aim for the course record. And then on the morning, we pretty much decided to go with that and just see how it went for the second half. I mean, conditions were good for the first half of the race, and then they got pretty tough towards the second. So I'm just delighted that it worked out in the end.
Always interested in, you know, what goes through a marathon runner's mind throughout. It's a long time to be out there by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the mental battles, but also on a positive, you said it was, you know, good conditions for the first half. Was that when you went, yeah, I'm feeling really good, I'm a good chance to have a crack at a PB or the record?
Yeah, I mean, we went through halfway pretty much on time, on record time, and then I knew at the turnaround at St Kilda it got a lot tougher, though. So I at that point, I didn't think that I'd get the course record, but I knew I should be on for a PB unless something went horribly wrong in the latter stages of the race, which often happens in the marathon. Like, if you don't fuel properly and hydrate, it can go very wrong at around like 36, 37K, but luckily it didn't on the day.
So how do you break down the race? The Melbourne Marathon, obviously all the marathons are on different circuits. Do you, on the starting line, you know at each point where you're going to push the pace, or is it just as you feel is how you run?
So I had a couple of the guys from MTC pacing me. So Jack Rayner and Stewie McSewan and another friend of mine, Max. And Jack is just back from, he was in Cardiff at the Comm Games half marathon last weekend, which he won. And he was just back, like, on, I think he got back on Friday, and yet he paced me the other day to 37K. So it was great to have the boys there with me. So that really helped with the pacing. I didn't have to think about that part of it at all. Like, we agreed on a pace and they just went out at that pace, and I just followed them. During the race, I was going to tell them if it felt too fast or too slow or whatever, but it felt really good on the day.
So we talk about the fact you only took up running in your mid-30s. Did you like run at all before then? Like, when did you realise, hey, I'm actually quite good at this?
I didn't run when I was younger. I ran a bit like for fitness prior to that, but I was always really sporty. Like, I was into soccer and basketball when I was younger, and I did my degree at home was PE and Irish teaching, so I was always hugely into sport. I just never got into running until I moved to Australia, and I think I did a time trial around the Tan in Melbourne one day, and one of the guys there was saying, you know, that's a really good time for someone who doesn't train, so he hooked me up with the Crosby crew, and that's where I met my coach Tim. And so it kind of all just started then. I was 33 then. It was just after having my first baby.
So you've just had your first baby. You've never really done running before, and you run around the Tan. What was the time?
I think my first attempt was 15:30, and then a couple of weeks later, I was able to drop it to 13:30, which is like really good, I guess, for if you, when you haven't trained that much.
What's your best around the Tan, Jimmy?
No. Don't keep time. But Sinead, can I ask why the marathon? You have to have a certain mindset to do it. 42K is a long way to be running. What's the attraction for people to do the marathon?
Yeah, it is. Like, it's a really, really long way. I'm definitely better over the longer distance. Like, I've always been better. Like, I initially at the 10K I was good, and then I was better again at the half, so it was kind of a natural progression. And there's something special about the marathon. I mean, it's just a different race to other races. Like, most people can run till about 30, 32K, you'll get through it, but something happens with glycogen and everything after 36K. It's just really tough and mentally really tough. So there's this massive sense of achievement at the end of it. And it's getting so popular now. Like, it's really, really fun to be involved in.
Yeah, because the only reason I ask is you said, oh, we'll just pace through 36 kilometres. And it's hard for us not to start giggling, going, oh, yeah, we'll just get paced out for 36 kilometres. It's a long way to be paced.
Yeah, like, Jack was actually supposed to pace me till about 32K because he hasn't run a marathon yet either and he wasn't sure how he'd go over the distance. I mean, the pace was pretty cruisy for him, but he, on the day then, because it was so windy coming back in St Kilda Road, I just asked him to hang in for another bit. He stayed with me to 37. But he was like, yeah, cool. No problem to him. So, yeah, that was really great.
Owed a lot to Richmond. They picked him as a mature age player. There was an opportunity for him, you know, I mean, that 22, and we looked at opportunities throughout the year, and Bulldogs, Sam Power did a great job.
Sam Power did a great job. That was Robbie D'Orazio, the manager of Sam Lloyd, who was a former Tiger, now a Western Bulldog. Sam Power did a great job, said Robbie. So we thought we'd track down the man himself and find out how good a job he did do, if he'll tell us, the list manager of the Western Bulldogs, who joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Sam.
Morning, Jimmy and Adam. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, buddy. You've done a great job, says Robbie. Well done.
thank you. No, it's good to have Sam Lloyd on board here, and he'll play a really important role for us, both up forward and also in the midfield.
When did you start to identify that he was the type of player that, A, you'd be able to get access to, but more importantly, from your perspective, B, you wanted?
Probably identified him reasonably early in the season, and then probably through the middle part of the season, the conversations picked up more with Robbie, but really not to the end of the season where we knew we were a big chance to get Sam. Obviously, Richmond sort of went pretty deep into September, and you know, he had an important role to play there and was hoping to get back into the team, so we had to respect that as well from his end.
Sam, when you're looking for, I guess, a certain position or a type of player, you know, to fill out a role within the team, is it like those small forwards or pressure forwards or whatever it may be, is it easier to get those players through trade and free agency than hitting the draft?
For us, it's definitely a need, our forward half of the ground. I mean, we've had a little bit of change in the last few years with Jake Stringer obviously going out and Stuart Crummery as well. And then some of probably our more ageing players in Tory Dixon and Liam Kicken up there, and they both had sort of injury interrupted years in 2018. So it was an area of the ground that we identified we needed to bring someone in, and probably the appeal with Sam was that he has flexibility, and he's demonstrated over the last 2 years that he can also play midfield as well.
You've got an intriguing list considering you won a premiership only 2 years ago, because it's sort of seen as a real emerging list with so many really talented young players under the age of 25. What's been your focus as list manager through this period, Sam?
Yeah, it is a really young group. You know, I think every round this year we're pretty much the youngest team, or for most of the rounds. So there's a lot of young talent that has got a lot of growth, but we think will develop into really, really good players. So it's a real balance for us. We're in a good position where we can go to the draft and build on that young talent, but also if the right option's there and in a really targeted approach, there's a possibility to bring someone in. But, you know, we obviously had an interest in Wingard that you know, didn't work in our favour, but at the same time now we're really, really confident to go in with pick 7 into the draft and get a really good young player.
I wanted to ask you about Chad, because he's obviously a hugely talented player, two-time All-Australian, you know, he wins games. And unfortunately, you couldn't get him over the line. But Bulldogs fans go, well, geez, okay, if you're in line to get him, you must have plenty of money to spend. What happens as a list manager when you miss out, that you don't then just go to the next best option, but you sort of keep your powder dry, I guess?
Yeah, we've got a really clear sort of strategy over the short, medium and long term. So our approach is very much, you know, really targeted. And once Chad didn't come through,
Well, I might just get you to step to the left, Sammy. You're just breaking up there a little bit, if you can.
Sorry. Our approach is really targeted. So, you know, the idea with Chad was obviously to play a really specific role for us. And once that fell through with this draft and the strength of the top end, you know, we're really confident, especially with our young group, that we can just build on that top end young talent.
There's been a couple of names through the year that have been brought up from the Western Bulldogs, strongly linked to the club through history. Of course, Mitch Wallace's dad played, and Tom Liberatore's dad played famously as a Brownlow medalist. Now, he re-signed Mitch at the back end of the year, which is fantastic. The Tom Liberatore situation, is it any clearer from your end that he will absolutely be a Bulldog next year?
We're very confident that Liber will be at the Bulldogs. We want to keep him. He wants to stay. So, and all that dialogue with his, with both Liber himself and also Tom Williams, his manager, has been really positive. So that from our end, that'll only be a matter of time. We want to keep him, and he's telling us that he wants to remain a Bulldog.
Is the same conversation being had with Marcus Adams? Because it doesn't seem that he wants to remain a Bulldog. What's happening with Marcus?
Marcus has asked for a fresh start at Brisbane. He's got 2 years to go on a contract, and we value him really highly. He's, he's our fullback when he's fit, and middle of this year, when he came back into the team against Geelong and North, we really got a spike in performance from having him out there. So it would have to be a really compelling offer from Brisbane for us to consider that one.
What does that look like?
Oh, I prefer not to go into the details of what a negotiation is, but, you know, it would have to be really compelling given his value and how highly we hold him, but also having 2 years remaining in a contract as well.
It's a good touch by Juric to get clear of the defender. And here's a chance for Awomobile, who rounds off his international debut with his first goal for his country. What a moment! And it's his fellow South Sudanese refugee teammate, Thomas Deng, who is the first across to celebrate.
One of the awesome stories in sport today, this one. Don't you worry about that. Awomobile scored in Australia's 4-0 win over Kuwait in the international friendly held in Kuwait overnight. It's an unbelievable story. I'll tell you more about it shortly with Archie Thompson, a former Australian Socceroos superstar who knows how to score willy-nilly, let alone just the first time. He probably doesn't even remember his first time. It was that long ago. Archie joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Arch.
Hey, boys. How are we?
We're going all right, mate. Do you remember your first Socceroos goal?
No, I don't. I actually can't remember when I lost my virginity. So how am I going to remember my last goal?
No, it's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Yeah, but it was a wonderful game last night, and great stories came out of it.
The Awomobile story, as we alluded to, he's born in a Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. His parents fled war-torn South Sudan to get there. He attained refugee status in Australia in 2006, aged 11, and today he scores for the Socceroos, Archie. It is an unbelievable story.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, sometimes we forget these little stories through sports, whether we always look at performances and results, but sometimes you've got to look at the beauty of sport and what it brings and what it gives and what our country gives. I mean, these guys have come, obviously, from war-torn countries, come to Australia to get a fresh start. Awomobile, Thomas Deng, and they get an opportunity and they took it. But look, it's just a beautiful story. And a good friend of mine actually was a manager of Mobile, or was a manager, and had a big say in, you know, kick-starting his career. Buddy Farah, who is a football manager here in Australia. And it's just fantastic. It was a great start to Graham Arnold's Socceroo coaching career.
Archie, I was going to ask you about Ozzie Graham. What do we expect from his style and, you know, the players that he's going to put out on the pitch? Does he have a lean towards certain players?
Well, you could tell early this morning that they're obviously trying to implement an attacking style of football, which they try to create a lot of opportunities with structured build-up in the front third. But you got to say that the opposition probably wasn't a Q8 team that we're used to, but, you know, it's always good for confidence to kickstart any campaign, you know, leading into an Asia Cup with a win. But you can tell that they were creating, they were a lot better in possession. If you want to be critical, is probably just that final pass that was a little bit lacking, because they got themselves into great opportunities to be able to get a shot on target and sort of wasted a few of those. So I think Graham Arnold will be addressing those.
What did we see, or what are we going to see, Archie, different from a Graham Arnold coach team to some of the other coaches we've had over the past 2 or 3 years when it comes to Ange, but also, obviously also what happened through the World Cup?
Look, I think with Ange trying to implement an attacking style of football, other coaches have always, especially the overseas ones, more a structured defensive style of football, due to the fact maybe just of the
players that they had. But I think with Graham Arnold, he's giving a lot of these young kids the opportunity, and he wants to play attacking style of football. And it's exciting because when you look at the players that came on, you've got Ozani and you've got Mabil that are really excited. They're the type of players that I like to see that are uncoachable almost in that front third.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.